SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Level three has begun. This is Sports Rage. I'm Morency, Sports Grid Radio and Television Networks. Sirius XM Channel 159 will welcome our AM radio affiliates in a couple of moments. The D-backs were up 4-1 on the Dodgers. The Dodgers put a two-spot up in the bottom of the sixth inning to make it 4-3. Arizona responds, man, scores three runs in the top of the seventh right now, and they're still batting. 7-3 D-backs. That might be it for the Los Angeles Dodgers right now. They might score a couple of more runs, actually. We'll take a look at the in-game total here, but I thought they had a chance of coming back and winning this game. The other L.A. team is on the verge of potentially winning for the first time. They're up 69-66 right now. The Sparks are up on the Mystics. 9 seconds left. We'll keep our eye on that for you. But as far as the total is concerned, it's 12.5 plus 125 to the over. So it goes to show the computer is expecting more runs in this game. Mo Khan's going to step up in it and join us in level three. Always cool breaking it down with Mo. A lot of stuff to get to. We'll talk NBA basketball, NHL hockey, NFL football, maybe a little CFL and more with Mo. We'll run the gauntlet with Mo Khan. It's a great time of the year right now. We're down to the final four, and we had a real classic tonight in Boston with the Pacers and the Celtics. Great game one. In hindsight, if you're the Pacers, you might say, you know, you let them off the hook. You had an opportunity to steal game one, steal home court. And if you're going to win the series, you're going to have to find a way to at least win one game in Boston. And I thought tonight was a winnable game for them. But give credit to the Celtics. They did what they had to do late. They outscored the Pacers and survived, right? Tatum's three late was massive. It was a one-point game, and Tatum scored to make it four. Tatum stepped up with a big-time basket, and the Celtics get it done. They're laying 8.5 in game two. So they were laying 10.5, and it came down to 9.5. I didn't see a lot of people like the Celtics in game one, actually. I was on the Pacers, but I don't think it was some sort of, like, sharp. It seemed like everybody was on the Pacers, and the total was too good to be true. Everybody really liked the over, but there was always that concern. Why is it only 222.5? It did go up to, like, 223 or so. So they did adjust a little bit. They've made it 225 for a game two. Thursday night, Pacers are getting 8.5. The total is 225. Mavericks and T-Wolves tip off tomorrow night, 8:30 Eastern time in Minnesota. The T-Wolves are 4.5-point favorites. The total is 28.5. If you're just joining us right now, we've talked quite a bit of hockey tonight. We had Andrew McKinnis and Joe Madden on. And a play that I've come up with, and it's kind of the easy way out in a way, because I'm not even picking winners here in these series. I think both NHL playoff series are both toss-ups, could go either way. My gut tells me the Panthers are going to beat the Rangers, and the Oilers and the Stars, also a complete toss-up. Like, it really is. I lean with the Edmonton Oilers. I think this might actually be their time. They showed a lot of resiliency against Vancouver, although Vancouver were shorthanded. Edmonton still got it done with their backs against the wall. One thing about the Edmonton Oilers is, over the last like few years, they've played in a lot of series, right? Like, they've been knocking on the door for a while. And I said earlier, like, there's a debate who's the best player never to win a Stanley Cup. Jerome McGinley never won a Stanley Cup. Marcel Dion, Matt Sundin. There's been some really good players, but Connor McDavid's considered one of the best players ever. Like, ever, ever. And he's not even, like, nearly done his career yet. Let's roll. Level three has begun. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morency. The pimps, the players, the hustlers, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. Shout out to all of our AM radio affiliates stepping up and in for level three on the Sports Grid Radio and Television Networks. There's a lot of stuff to unpack as we had a wild game one tonight in Boston. The Pacers cover the number in the game, sailed way over the number. But Dennis Green can no doubt be heard, may he rest in peace, that we let him off the hook. Because the Pacers had an opportunity to steal game one, steal home court advantage. And props to the Boston Celtics for responding and not losing this game. But I feel like the Boston Celtics are like a college basketball team that murder teams all year, don't really play in a lot of close games. But if you get them in a close game, they're beatable. They made enough shots, although the Pacers had an opportunity to win this game. They didn't, but they did cover the number. I thought that coming in to the NBA playoffs, when I saw the future prices and I saw that the Pacers were 30-1, I thought, look, there's only four teams. There's not 14 teams. There's only four teams. It's not impossible that they beat Boston. Then you've got them at 30-1 in the NBA Finals. So I put a little play in on it, thinking, wow, am I ever smart? And this is going to look good. And maybe I'll even be able, you know, we're really going to have something to work with here if we could win game one. But no, they let him off the hook. And the adjusted number right now, and I sarcastically said at the time, right after the game, I said, well, there goes that 30-1. It's probably going to be 50-1 now. It's 50-1 now. I still think that's a good price. And in fact, I might just put like, you know, you put $50 on this. You're talking about $1,200, right? You know, it doesn't take a lot on this. $50 wager, $2,550 return on the Pacers right now. We put 50 on 30-1 already. I might just put another 50 on this. I think they can play with them, right? This series is far from done. Boston are probably going to win, but this is whack. The Boston Celtics are minus 170. The T-Wolves are plus 260. The Mavericks are plus 550, and the Pacers are 50-1. Like, dude, I think that the Pacers and the Celtics is probably going to go seven games. So you're getting a massive, stupid price right now. And as far as the series price is concerned, we'll get into this. Mo Khan is going to step up. A lot of stuff to unpack with Mo, including the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Dallas Mavericks, which is going to be a super fun series. It's cool to, like, Boston's not fresh blood, right? Boston's in the Eastern Conference Finals all the time. But the Pacers are fresh blood. The Mavericks are fresh blood. The T-Wolves are fresh blood. The Final Four of the National Hockey League right now is very geographically spread out and different storylines. The Edmonton Oilers with the best player in the league looking for their first Stanley Cup with Connor McDavid. The Dallas Stars, who look like just an unstoppable force right now. The Florida Panthers, who lost in the finals last year. And you got the President's Cup trophy winners and the New York Rangers, who a lot of 1994 magic and synergy keeps repeating itself. So we'll get Mo Khan's thoughts on that. I'll give you my thoughts. And just for the record, we put together a parlay, actually, of both NHL playoff series is going over 5.5 games. So we don't even have to pick a winner because it's difficult to pick a winner. For the record, I think the Panthers are going to beat the Rangers, and I think the Oilers are going to beat the Stars. So it's going to be a weird Stanley Cup, you know, Florida versus Alberta, Edmonton, you know, the most traditional hockey cold market against the Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup Finals. I think that's how it's going to play out. But any combination would not surprise me. As far as the Mavericks and the T-Wolves are concerned, another series that you know is going to be a long one. But when it's all said and done, I think the Minnesota Timberwolves are just more complete team. The number one defensive team in the NBA all season long. Rudy Gobert is a big-time difference maker. Edwards really is on the verge of superstardom right now. They've got, you know, Karl Anthony Towns doesn't even have to be the guy. There's a lot to like about this Minnesota Timberwolves, that team. But Luka Doncic is unbelievable. And he believes that the Dallas Mavericks can get it done. Kyrie Irving's been there and done that before. We got some great stuff coming up. And there's always a letdown, right? You know, I mean, we're down to the Final Fours. A lot of people's favorite teams have been eliminated. But, man, June is around the corner. And this summer is like no other, actually. There's not going to be that same type of lull once the NBA and the NHL ends. You know, we've got the Copa America, the Euro Cup, and the freaking Olympics this summer. Let's roll. This is Sports Rage.
Sports- SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This is Sports Rage. I am Morenci. 7-3 for the Arizona Diamondbacks right now in the eighth inning. Dodgers came back. It was 4-1. They made it 4-3, but the D-backs responded with three quick runs. So it's 7-3 in the top of the eighth inning. Right now, a lot of stuff to get to. We were just talking about a parlay that I put together for the Stanley Cup playoffs moving forward. Both these series, I think, could go either way. And I think both these series are going to be kind of longer series. And when I say longer, six games or more. I'd be extremely surprised if the Panthers or Rangers beat each other 4-1. And I'd be extremely surprised if the Oilers or Stars beat each other 4-1. So both series to go over 5.5 games is plus 128. I think that's not a bad look. But we'll get back to the pucks. Let's talk about this NBA game tonight. And there was so much talk about the Pacers and the Knicks and the old school rivalry, but the Pacers and the Celtics used to play some pretty big time games, man. Remember Chuck Pearson and Larry Bird, and you know, Bird being from Indiana, and then of course Bird went with the Pacers after, and you know, was a GM and president and all that. But the Pacers have had a nice rivalry with Boston, and this is just another chapter tonight. 133-128 was the final score of a basketball game, but some would argue that the Pacers are going to really regret not winning in the big picture. Mo Khan steps up and in. Basketball play-by-play voice, TSN statistician, former wide receiver, and more. Mo, always a pleasure. Did the Pacers let them off the hook tonight and not winning this game?
They did, but Gabe, you think about the first half, right? They're chasing the game. So it wasn't as if they had like a 25-point lead and they lost as they did in overtime. It was more like, hey, they worked hard. They got back in the game. They had the lead. The crazy shot from the basketball gods got Boston the overtime session, and we saw what happened at the end of the day. But my biggest concern, if I'm Boston, is that they were minus 17 from the bench points produced. I think Indiana had 30. And Boston had like 13 in total here. And we talk about the Celtics and how, you know, we spoke about this before, about Porzingis. If he's healthy, they're unbeatable or they're very tough to beat. But you talk about the athleticism of Indiana. They miss a healthy Porzingis to be that guy from the kind of curb what they bring with the run-and-gun offense for the Pacers. But at the end of the day, though, it's not that Indiana shot themselves in the foot. At the end of the day, they were chasing this game. They came back. They had a lead, but unfortunately did not close that when it mattered most with the final 10 seconds left in the ballgame.
No, they did, too. They had that, was it up to four? I think they had a four-point lead briefly, man, with about a minute and a half left or so. And it was like, guys, you're a possession. One thing I didn't like about the Pacers, but, and listen, Carlisle's a great coach, but they, in the last minute, and we were live, I don't know what was going on, and I was on the Pacers, too, but in the last minute, mode, they were leading the game. They were up by three, they were up by four type of deal. And they kept on shooting threes, man, with like a minute and a half left. And at some point, I remember once I was like, dude, like with Halliburton, I said, at some point, there needs to be an adult in the room and say, all right, listen, we're winning the game, guys. All right. And there's only 57 seconds left. Let's not force up a quick shot, work the clock down a little bit here, and let's get to the free throw line. But it's just not in their DNA. So it's hard to like do something that you're not used to doing late in the game. But if you're the Pacers, you're right. They spotted them the 12-0 lead to start the game, Mo. But if I'm the Pacers, it's a little frustrating because really, you got something from everybody, bro. Halliburton, 25. Yeah. Siakam, 24. Turner, 23. Nesmith, 14. Nembhard, 12. Toppin, 15. McConnell, 13. A complete team effort, and you still fell short. But if you're the Pacers, you've sent a message to Boston. Did Boston have a series on their hands, Mo?
Yeah, and no, it's funny. You brought up a point about they live and die by the three. We spoke about this scenario about 3-4 months ago with the Lions and Niners, right? How the Lions kind of live and die by the fourth down, and it cost them dearly against San Fran in the NFC title game. And the same thing here with the Pacers right now, Gabe, is that you're right. They will never relent from what they are, and they're going to throw up threes no matter where they are. And look, at the end of the day, Gabe, it's not a one-off here. It's the best out of seven. I'm not saying the Pacers are going to win the series here, but they'll be a tough out, no question. And again, if they win that rebounding battle and they get the same effort, as you made the point, from the point production value from their backups and depth chart guys, they will make it a lot tougher for Boston to win this in five, not six games.
That's the one thing that the Pacers have been impressive in the playoffs, too, is the rebounding. They weren't a great rebounding team during the year. But no. they out-rebounded the Knicks. They did a good job tonight on the glass against the Celtics. I get the feeling, like you, Mo, the Celtics will survive. They'll move on. It'll either be a hard six or it'll go seven. I think the Pacers do have some wins in them. The Fieldhouse is a tough place to play, too. They are a very good home team, the Pacers.
They are. And we spoke about the road efforts, the road woes. And that's where, if you're in the Indiana game, they got to take a game in Boston. I mean, if you're going to sweep the home games, cool
up on that street. They can't win the series, bro. They don't have home court. You're right. They need to win one game in Boston. But don't you think they're going to feel pretty confident about it? And, dude, the Celtics haven't been that dominant at home over the playoffs in the last couple of years, Mo. They really haven't.
They haven't. And the thing about this Celtic team game, I know people are throwing rose petals at Tatum for the coming out effort that he had in the second half. But the reality is, right, when you look at this Pacers team, they're playing with house money. They have nothing to lose. Man, no one thought Indiana would be in the third round game. No one thought. They thought maybe two rounds, tops. But for them to do this without Ben Mathurin, to do this with the acquisition Siakam came in January, February, they've done this on the ability of imagination and Carlo having these guys buy into his philosophy. And you're right, Gabe. I think that game two, it might be down 0-2 for Indiana. But going back to Indiana, though, it won't be easy for Boston to come with at least one, if not two, at the end of the day. So I think this goes six, but the reality is, for Indiana, they got to win that one game in Boston. This might be their chance tomorrow or on Thursday whenever they play again for game number two.
Updated series price right now, guys. The Pacers are plus 950 to beat the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are now minus 1,700. All right, on the other side, we'll get most thoughts on the Dallas Mavericks and the Minnesota Timberwolves series that's set for tip-off tomorrow, which another series I'm expecting it to be a long one. Yeah, we've seen both teams sort of be all over the place, right? They'll get blown out. Then they'll look great the next game. You know, which team could be more consistent in this series? I personally am leaning with the Minnesota Timberwolves because they're just better defensively, and I think they're deeper than the Mavericks. We'll get Bo's take on that on the other side.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Sports Rage continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Shout out to all of our AM radio affiliates. The Mightier 1090, ESPN Radio, the 50,000-watt juggernaut. In the house, up and down the coast. Mo Khan joining us from the East Coast right now. We're just talking about the NBA Final Four. So the Pacers are now plus 950 to win the series. The Celtics are minus 1,700. We'll get you the series handicap spread numbers a little bit later on because I agree with Mo. I think the Pacers did still have a couple of wins left in them. But as far as the Mavericks and the T-Wolves are concerned, I lean with the T-Wolves to win this series. It wouldn't shock me, Mo, if the Mavericks won, but I do lean with the T-Wolves. And I get the feeling the T-Wolves can beat the Boston Celtics as well. It'd be a great series, actually, Boston and Minnesota. But, man, you got Luka Doncic, you got a chance. You got Kyrie Irving, you got a chance. So it's not like the Dallas Mavericks can't win this series. But I don't think the T-Wolves should be this heavily a favorite. They're minus 190 favorites to win. Yeah. This series against the Dallas Mavericks. I do, it's probably going to be a seven-game series, at least six. What's your take on Dallas and Minnesota?
I picked Dallas to beat OKC, Gabe, if you remember. I thought this is a team, the turn of March, looked
so
like.
So did I, actually, though. So did I. I thought that their experience would be the difference.
Agreed. And this is a team that, turn of March, March 1 to where we are today, they've been playing incredible basketball. Kyrie Irving has been phenomenal, right? There's no circus off the court. It's been him focusing on ball. Him and Luka have had that rapport that we thought maybe would not be there when they acquired Kyrie over a year ago, whatever it was. But I think now, when you go up against a Minnesota team that lacks the playoff experience of that status, I think Dallas has that chance to pull off, not an upset here, but to win this in six or seven games because of the fact that they're much more calm. And think about the way Minnesota's gone about with their business this playoff run, okay? They went into Denver and won three times, Gabe. You know the road team in this series is going to be key. And I think I look at Minnesota and how they've been so far this year at home. They've been good here. But I just think for Dallas, though, and how Luke has been so far, he's got a chip on his shoulder, Gabe, because you talk about this core group, right? Luka, can he win the big one? Can he get to the finals? He has to have his moment. And this could be his moment now where he can take out the hottest name in the NBA in Anthony Edwards. And if he does that and gets the NBA finals, this adds more lore to Luka Doncic and what he can be as being the potential face of the NBA for the next 10 to 15 years.
It's a good point. As good as Anthony Edwards is, Doncic is still the best player on the court.
Agreed.
And they have Kyrie Irving, who, like you said, who has hit, you know, big threes in championship games before and has won championships and played in big basketball games. It's a fun series, man. So how do you think it plays out?
Man, I'm sticking with the Mavericks. I agree with you. I think the T-Wolves should be favored, but not by that line that you've mentioned before. I think it's quite extremely high for what it should be. But I think what it'll come down to will be Kyrie Irving, what he does. I think he's going to be the linchpin towards the Mavericks' hopes of getting to the NBA Finals for the first time in, 10, 12 years. And if he does play well to Kyrie, I think they win this in six games. But I think the T-Wolves, realistically speaking, Gabe, are probably a year away from being where they want to be. And that means they have to acquire another piece or two to help offset Anthony Edwards and now Big Cat, who's now playing pretty good basketball the last couple of games or so.
Different sports. So I don't, you know, it's not a completely fair comparison, but I think there are somewhat similar situation actually with Connor McDavid and Luka Doncic. Very similar, right? They're in their prime, they're dominant players. You've got Leon Draisaitl, you've got Kyrie Irving. The Dallas Mavericks, the window's not going to be there forever, right? It just isn't. There's teams are getting better and better right now. The San Antonio Spurs, Wembanyama, bro, is like 2 years off. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a current, there's a tide change, and the Oklahoma City Thunder are loaded with draft picks still and money, and, like, there's just a lot of really good teams. You know, Luka's almost like Josh Allen, too. Like, eventually, at some point, you've got to win, right? Is this his time, Mo, to get there?
Yeah, and I believe, Gabe, Luka's contract is up in a couple of years. From what I remember reading last year when they were talking about the demise of the Mavericks, right, with them being an early exit in the whole playoff window. So for the Mavericks now, under the new ownership group and with Mark Cuban now being more of a GM or de facto player personnel guy, whatever term you want to use for him, this is big for the Mavericks because if they make a deep run now, it demonstrates to the NBA world that, hey, they are a legitimate destination for players to come because in that tough West, you need two, if not three studs plus a strong supporting cast. And you saw what happened to the Nuggets, Gabe. They lost that key supporting cast members, and that's why Denver's Washington T-Wolves play the Mavericks in the third round of the playoffs.
That's why it's so hard to repeat, man. You win, people want to get paid. People think, oh, we'll win without Bruce Brown. Well, it's not easy, right? When you lose that depth. It's true.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This is Sports Rage. I am Moretzi. Mo Khan kicking with us right now on the Sports Grid Radio and Television Networks. Taking a look at the Mavericks and the T-Wolves. I was hoping to pull the trigger and get the Mavericks plus 2.5 games in this series, but we could, but we're going to have to put it in parlays because it's minus 340. It's too pricey to do it. Getting the Mavericks, so the series to go 7 games, Mavericks plus 1.5 games is minus 155. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a battle, man, to see if the T-Wolves defense can. One thing about the T-Wolves defense, though, Mo, they have a big strength on the inside, and Dallas don't really live on the inside that much. So it nullifies a little bit. If you look at the past history, Dallas have had success against this T-Wolves team.
Yeah, and here's the thing, right? You make a great point about the interior-exterior of both teams, right? The presence of Rudy and Cat Cat can defend a little bit here, but Rudy Gobert is not an open space defender. He's not. Like, he's a rim protector. He's a great assist man when it comes to helping out on help defense here. And the thing is, can they pull him out into the open space?
Which was really good to have against Jokic, right? And the Denver Nuggets and those pick and rolls, because Denver live in the paint, bro. Right? They love to hit the pick and roll, and Murray loves to come in and do. Look at how easy those little floaters were for Murray. Remember when you and I were on the air all the time and Murray kept on hitting game winners against the Lakers? That wasn't there, bro, against Minnesota. They were no, we play defense in the paint. We're going to hit you, and you're not just going to come in. And with your little patented floater here, it's not going to work. But Dallas can kind of nullify that a little bit because Kyrie is so good at finishing in the paint, bro. So I think Kyrie can beat Gobert and get in there. And then conversely, you know, they take a lot of threes. They shoot from the outside. They don't really set up interior all that much. It's going to be interesting. Like the X and O is going to be fascinating to see between these two.
And remember the fourth quarter of Game 7 with the Nuggets and T-Wolves? Anthony Edwards said, let me lock up Jamal Murray. Remember that stolen ball at midcourt? That changed the game's dynamics, I thought. I thought the Nuggets became a little bit flustered, full of angst, and the T-Wolves just grew and grew and grew. So I would expect Edwards to lock up with Kyrie because he's going to say to himself, I can lock up the best handler or the best ball handler in the NBA right now and control him. And that's where I think it'll come down to is that can the big hitters of the T-Wolves play good defense against a very good, well-balanced Maverick team? And Jason Kidd, who we've not given much credit to, Gabe, you know, in this stint now with the Dallas Mavericks, I beg your pardon, he has really calmed this team down and really see it from not from a micro but from a macro perspective that has made it much more effective as a team at both ends of the court.
It's very, very good. Listen, Kidd has done a very good job with his team, getting him to buy in. Luka feels very confident, too, which I think that's something. As he stated, I've never been as confident in my teammates and a team that I've been on before as this team, which, you know, belief is a lot, right? In the past, people have thought, all right, Luka doesn't fully trust his teammates fully. Now they do. Conversely, Minnesota are the favorites here, Mo, but let's talk about them from their fault side. We praise their defense. Edwards is a superstar in the making, but they do have offensive lulls at times, right? They're not 100% consistent on offense. So it could be a challenge. Like, Dallas are good at scoring. So if I'm Dallas, I want to push the tempo on them, right? I don't want to let them set up half court. I don't want to let them do their little defensive get into their defensive stances and stuff. I want to keep them running because Minnesota are big dudes. So you want to keep these guys moving and playing really fast. I think Dallas, I think that's the strategy. If I'm the Mavericks, I'm going to try to outscore them, right? I'm going to say, you know what, we're going to play a little faster than these guys. Edwards can play fast, but Towns can, you know, Towns is hit or miss. Conley is hit or miss. Like, offensively, they can be challenged at times.
And you think about this, Gabe, I think Minnesota wants to keep this in the 90s. Anything above 100 is favoring Dallas in this series. If Minnesota can keep this in the 90s and make it a
Dallas
real...
Dallas want to get into the 110s.
Yeah, 120s, right? And I might play well in a little parlays here. But if Minnesota can put a little congestion in the lane and make it tough for the Mavericks to penetrate through the paint and make them into jump shooters and hopefully have great defending from their supporting cast, it plays into Minnesota's hands. But, you know, Chris Finch, for what he's built up here, again, this is not an F1 car, Gabe. This is more like a NASCAR car. Like, they're going to do left turns on you, and just come out there and slam the ball in your face, and they don't care who's in front of you. And that's why if this game's in the 90s, it favors Minnesota. And if they can do that game in game one, if not game two, this could definitely be a fascinating ending because, again, for Luka Doncic and for Kyrie Irving, for the entire supporting cast in Dallas, can they play in that type of environment where it's a low-scoring affair? And that's what we're going to find out in the first couple games that we'll have between these two teams.
Mo Cod kicking it with us. So, Mo, I think it's going to happen, actually, that J.J. Redick will be the coach of the Lakers. Now, this has been a pretty exhaustive process that's been going on behind the scenes. And it's funny because if you recall, give credit to the Raptors, if you remember. Remember, it was at this time last year, the Raptors met with J.J. Redick. Right. And a lot of people laughed, actually. People were like, what? What the hell are the Raptors doing? And they were very impressed with them, but the lack of experience overall, they just didn't, you know, it didn't work out fully, but credit the Raptors. They were like the first ones to recognize, you know what, J.J. Redick's a smart guy, so let's hear what he has to say. And Masai Ujiri basically said after, you know, he said, we wanted to hear what he had to say about our team, actually. Even more than like we were ready to hire him, they respected him that much. They sat down with him. What do you think about our team? What would you do? Right? What, you know, what about this player? What about that player? It's pretty clear he is very respected. The podcast with LeBron James, I mean, that can't just be nothing, right? I mean, that suddenly they become buddies like this. And what's their podcast about? Pure basketball, X and O's, right? That LeBron said, oh, I want to, you know, it's nice to talk with someone that actually gets it. And it's just a basketball show. So the reports are that the Lakers are very intrigued and that they're seriously considering this right now. Do you think that J.J. Redick is going to be the next coach of the Lakers?
They have no other option, Gabe. I mean, here's the thing, though. If LeBron's playing two more years of NBA with the Lakers, right, what happens to J.J. Redick's credibility with his team in 2 years' time? Because is he a mouthpiece for LeBron James? You know, is LeBron James having an influence in this
No,
whole
I would say no, Mo, only because there's other teams that like J.J. Redick. Like, put it this way. J.J. Redick will be a coach in the NBA, point blank. The only question is when.
But right now, Gabe, how many teams would drop their current head coach for J.J. Redick? Right? Because the Lakers are not in position. Like, you look at the history of the Lakers of recent, right? They hired Darvin Ham, who had no experience, right? He was 2 years and done. They had Frank Vogel a couple years ago, won the title, right, in the
bubble. They unfairly blame Vogel. Let's call it out for what it is.
Right, right. And exactly. And, you know, the Lakers since Phil have not been stabilized at the coaching position.
No, they don't treat their coaches very well either. Like, you can win a championship, and they always blame you. You get blamed for everything no matter what, like, you know?
Right. It reminds me of, to use an English soccer example, they remind me of Chelsea FC, right? They're always rotating coaches to spend money, and they want to be relevant, this and that.
Oh, but Mo, if they weren't the Lakers, coaches wouldn't even want to talk to them. They'd be like, you guys throw coaches under the bus. Like, you guys don't treat coaches very well, but it's the effing L.A. Lakers, bro, so everybody's going to listen if they call.
But the reality is the Lakers are a disjointed roster. They don't have anything that says to you they're going to jump the Nuggets, they're going to jump the T-Wolves and the OKC Thunder. There's nothing that says they're going to be a top three team next year.
They're good, but there's no more upside. They are what they are. There's no upside to it.
It is Anthony Davis's team moving forward, and can they keep him healthy, and can he buy into J.J.'s philosophy, whatever it might be, moving forward, if he's that coach of the Lakers?
Well, I imagine J.J.'s philosophy is a million threes. That's what I am not in the room, but I'm sort of guessing that a guy that lives shooting a three and believes in modern analytics is probably thinking, and the Lakers aren't built to shoot three. They can't shoot.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This is Sports Rage. I am Morency. LaMelo Ball being sued for allegedly driving over an 11-year-old child's foot. I hope the kid's foot is all right. I've actually got LaMelo Ball shoes. They're pretty cool. Puma. J.J. Redick, I think it's probably going to happen. The Lakers have gone through these big-name coaches and the recycled coaches. Who really is out there that's a perfect fit that isn't just another one of these guys that they've already had, so to speak, or exactly like they've had? Like you said, Mo, I don't think they're going to go with some assistant again without any experience. Yeah. Right, so I don't need to go that route. And then you go down the, okay, you already had a Frank Vogel type and you fired him. Like, how many other guys, like, how many people are really out there? You hear Budenholzer, and that's a classic example. This is like the NHL. What are we, you're just recycling coaches? So what? Yeah. Like, Budenholzer got, like, they never liked Budenholzer in Milwaukee. Then they finally won, And he was like, good, whatever. I don't need this. Like, you know what I mean? I don't need this stress forever. Like, you could tell that guy, Budenholzer would not be a good fit for L.A. The guy, like, no. looked like he was going to have a heart attack with Milwaukee. Like, he looked stressed, bro. He was always coaching for his job. He knew it. There was always heat on him and stuff. I think he's a good coach, but I just don't think it's a good fit for the Lakers. And we all know, as you know, Mo, and as if you brought up before, we know Coach K has Jeannie Buss's ear, right? Yeah. I mean, point blank. He's an advisor to the Lakers. He's always been behind the scenes. We know Kobe Bryant loved him, wanted him, always, oh, man, if you ever coach in the NBA, it'd be great, man, if you were to coach of the Lakers. LeBron loves Coach K. And J.J. Redick played for Coach K. There's a lot of stuff going in this direction here.
Yeah. No, for sure. And, you know, when you look at...
I imagine,
at,
Mo, they're probably considering a staff, actually. Like, they'd say, all right, who else would be on this staff? And it could probably be a couple of Duke guys there. Wouldn't shock me.
He would need to assemble a staff that has NBA experience. He can't go in with the same...
That's what I'm saying.
That is who he is, right?
Like a former head coach type stuff that's been a head coach type experience.
Right. For sure. And I think for
sort of like
JJ,
Martelli did. Remember Martelli and Juwan Howard in Michigan?
That's right. Exactly. Kind of helped Juwan become the Michigan head coach a few years ago. But I just think now, if you're the Lakers, the direction you got to take is this. It's Anthony Davis you have to build upon. It's not LeBron James anymore. LeBron's going to be there. He's going to do his thing. No problem. But you're bereft of talent. You don't have talent to work with. So the draft picks, non-existent. So you have to go in the market to acquire someone. But who's going to trade with the Lakers, though? Right? The Lakers don't have anything they can give up that's going to
Well, they're going to lose. I know. They're going to lose D'Angelo Russell. They're not going to give him all that money. No. The talk is they're trying to get Donovan Mitchell. That's sort of they think that's the third piece. Right? I don't know if, like, dude, they want to trade 28 and 29 draft picks. Like, what do they have to do to get them? And yeah, Cleveland and gave up so much already, bro, so they can't just give up on it without getting something back.
No, and I think for Cleveland, you know, Miami's going to be playing for Spider Mitchell, right? The Heat want to get back to where they were a couple years ago, being a relevant team in the East. And I just think for the Lakers, you know, I said to you off air, you know, this could go two ways, right? It could be Steve Kerr or it could be Steve Nash, you know?
With J.J. Redick, yeah.
J.J. Redick, right. And that's where I think the trap door, the whole idea of J.J. being the guy, it could work out. And he's eloquent. He knows the game. He knows it better than you and I combined. But the reality is you are in L.A. You're not in Utah. You're not in Charlotte. You are in L.A. where it's about the rings. It's not about being 15-32 and going to the second round of the NBA playoffs.
You're a Raider fan. Same thing, like Mike Mayock was a big draft guru on TV and everybody loved him until he was a general manager and in control of a football team. People didn't love him so much anymore, right?
No,
like,
exactly.
So J.J. Redick, like, you know, it's one thing to be – put it this way, Mo, you're always right if you're in the media. You're always going to sound smart, right? Are you going to be as right and look as cool to everybody when you're riding a six-game losing streak, right?
That's it. And this thing now, for LeBron, I mean, look, he's not going anywhere, Gabe. He's not leaving L.A. His business, his life, his kids.
No, I've never bought in that he's leaving either. He's got a couple of years left. He's going to ride it out with the Lakers.
100%. And again, as I said to you before, as we said last segment, once he's gone in 2 years' time, is J.J. still being respected in that locker room? Because look at it this way. I'll use the conspiracy theory. When J.J. speaks in the locker room, if he's the head coach, is he speaking for LeBron James or is he speaking for himself?
Because I think he's his own guy.
But remember, right? Like, LeBron is very selective with who he did the podcast with. He chose J.J., right, to be his podcast tag team partner. So that guy who's the number 12 man on the roster, is he saying to himself, well, bleep this, because you know what? This is not J.J. Redick talking. It's LeBron James talking through J.J. to get a point through about, hey, this team's not playing well. So that's why
I think J.J. Redick's playing career is enough to get respect from players. Put it this way, there's a lot of other people that don't have the resumes that J.J. Redick do, right?
Right, but Steve Nash
it would be quick.
Too,
yeah, he did, but that was a bad hire, bro. That was just different. Like, but no one ever thought of Steve Nash, really. Like, put it this way, was Steve Nash a good with Team Canada? You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not.
A run.
Yeah, he was a better general manager, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, Steve Nash, he's a better executive to me. Like, it was a weird, weird fit for him to be the coach. It was just so random to be the coach of the Brooklyn Nets, right? But it was. It was a random thing because he lived there. Oh, he lived there. This is a wild story, Mo. Where time's flying by here tonight with you. I want to get to this. So, you know, this NIL stuff, we live in a crazy NIL world right now. But we've got a situation here. This is the first time I've ever seen a lawsuit. Now, this is going to scare people when head coaches are starting to get sued. So Billy Napier is getting sued. Jaden Rashada sues Florida coach Billy Napier over failed NIL deal. So basically, the long story short is he claims that the Miami Hurricanes were going to pay him $9 million, all right, to play.
Yeah.
And then they had an NIL set up for him for $9 million, and he was going to do it. But the Florida Gators came along and said, we'll give you $13 million. And he flipped, except the Gators never gave him any money.
No.
The NIL deal fell through because it was kind of shady to begin with. Well, we'll finish this up on the other side.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, we got a couple of more minutes with Mo here. And Mo is actually a Florida Gator fan, so he does know all about this story. So they flipped him. Serves him right for getting greedy. He already had $9 million from Miami. So just taking it, kid. That's the lesson. Next time someone offers you $9 million, take it. So Florida comes along with $13 million. Yet, you know, there's no contract for this. And as you would know, Mo, so they had an NIL collective, whatever, a bunch of boosters. But in typical Florida fashion, it was pretty shady. And it got shut down because there was a lot of, like, stuff going on that was unaccounted for. Long story short, Billy Napier is a good guy, but that seat is heating up fast, bro. Gator fans are going to – their patience are going to run thin, and the Gators are going to have to hire, like, a big-time coach. It's the only way here. I mean, look, Brian Kelly goes to LSU. He's getting all these players. The recruiting just isn't up to par with Florida right now to where it needs to be. And now you've got lawsuits. And, you know, it's funny. Gator fans, I know Brent Beard is a regular on our show. He's a Heisman Trophy voter. He lives in Florida. He speaks at the Gator Club. So we know all about the Gators. And he said, like, the boosters understood that it would be a little bit of a rebuild. Right, the facilities, the recruiting after, you know, they fell behind. But they're losing more than they thought they would lose, Mo.
Yeah, and that's because they're still stuck in the 80s and 90s, right? They're only catching up now to Georgia, LSU, all the big hitters of the SEC. The thing with Napier, though, is that this might be a blessing to Scott from Florida to get off and fire him with cause because – again, you're being sued. If this ends up being true that he did,
you're looking to throw him under the bus, huh? You're like, all right, this is a chance to get rid of him.
But right now, Florida's schedule, Gabe, they have 7 of the top 25 on their schedule. This is like unbelievable.
They opened with Miami, and Miami's under a lot of pressure too. Both those coaches, right. Man, I wouldn't want to be the loser of that game.
No, and that's a key afternoon window game, 3:30 kickoff in Gainesville. And if Florida were to lose that game, it just gets even scorchers for Billy Napier, because remember, his recruiting class last November was number 3. By early signing day, it dropped down to 13, 14. It got saved by Lagway and a couple other guys who signed, who were top tier guys at their position skill sets. But everyone has now realized Florida has almost become a toxic recruiting area under Dan Mullen, under Jim McElwain, under, you know, other guys before him, Will Muschamp included. And now for Billy Napier, if he can't recruit in the backyard of Florida, this might be a situation for Scott Strickland, the AD, to say, look, we got to move off of Napier. But the thing is, Strickland may not be given a third chance to hire a football coach because of how it failed under his watch with Napier. And, of course, under Dan Mullen, who was let go because he didn't recruit well in the state of Florida. And, of course, outside of that.
And one thing, guys, with the state of Florida, we see, like when the Florida Gators were hot and Urban Meyer was there, everybody in the state wanted to play for them because they were winning.
Agreed.
But you're right, Mo. Like, the Gators sort of just think that, oh, people will want to play for us because we're the Florida Gators. It's like, well, that doesn't really fully work anymore. No, like, they don't. Like, and your facilities aren't up to par. You're recruiting, as you stated, you're losing players often. And as we stated, like, when Bobby Bowden was king, Florida State, and Norvell's doing a great job, Mo. Right? Norvell is the king of that state now.
Yeah, he's worked the portal well to make FSU relevant, right? But at some point, it's going to catch up. But today's game, the thing is, today's college football world, it's all about how you work the portal. And FSU's done a remarkable job.
They're the best team in the state now. They're going to be in the playoffs right now, this year. There's 12 of them, right? I mean,
yeah, they should make it this summer.
Yeah, they lost a lot of talent, actually. But, dude, they're loaded. They got DJ. Like you said, they're transferring. They got DJ Hughes, their quarterback now. I'm expecting big things. Their defense is really good. Their secondary is loaded. Like, the defensive, like, through the spring practice and game stuff, like, their defense is, like, killer type stuff. So, the FSU, their defense is really good. They got a star quarterback. And they got to replace the wide receivers, though, right? Johnny Wilson and, of course, Keon Coleman. Yeah. So, Mo, we got only a minute left here, but there's odds out. Who's going to be the starting quarterback in week one for your Raiders? Gardner Minshew, -350. And our boy, Aiden O'Connell, is a big underdog. I'm telling you, I think O'Connell could be the starter in week one. What's your take? We got 20 seconds.
I think it's Minshew. It's Minshew. Remember, Pierce Telesco brought in Minshew, and O'Connell was not a draft pick by Telesco. So I think Minshew will be the number one guy come week one when they play the Chargers.
I'm going to say that O'Connell beats him out in camp. I actually do think it's one of the rare teams that'll have a quarterback battle, though. I think Pierce will go with whoever he thinks is the best quarterback. I just personally think you're better off starting O'Connell and then potentially going to Minshew after. But we got to get out of here. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.